Thank you, choir, as always. But I'm not going to say it was perfect, okay? I'm not going to say it was perfect. Make me to hear joy and gladness, so that my bones which have been broken may rejoice. Make me to hear joy and gladness, that my bones which have been broken may rejoice. This is from the book of Psalms, Psalm 51, purported to have written by King David. After King David was called out by his prophet and advisor Nathan, who called him out on his adulterous affair with the married Bathsheba. And then, after the affair, to cover it up, David had Bathsheba's husband Uriah killed in battle. David started as a poor shepherd boy, but through courage, political cunning, manipulation, let's name that too, luck, and might some say the love of God, he became the most celebrated king of Israel. But it came with a price. His bones were broken along the way. Before he became king, King Saul pursued him to no end. And for a time, David hid among his enemies, the Philistines, and made common cause with them. Kind of manipulation there. David was very politically savvy. Very savvy. Perhaps the only person David really truly loved was his friend Jonathan, who was killed in battle. And then after his affair with Bathsheba, things never seemed to be right with David. His son, Absalom, overthrew him for a time. And eventually Absalom was killed, though, but it was humiliating for David. And David did love Absalom, despite Absalom trying to overthrow him. And some theologians think that David died a cold and lonely death. Loveless death. But through it all, David was always loyal to God, and he always gave God credit for what David had achieved. And again, the book of Psalms is said to be purported to be authored mostly by David. We don't know for sure. But the Psalms have been a source of comfort and solace for many in Western civilization. And when I visited a teenage detainee at the Stewart Detention Center, the ICE Detention Center in Lumpkin, Georgia, this teenage detainee who's been there for 6 months without a visitor said his only source of hope and inspiration was the book of Psalms. And when I was a struggling young parent, a Methodist minister who was counseling me pointed me towards the Psalms, and I did find some comfort there. But I also found a lot of troubling things there as well. A lot of troubling things. I found it to be a troubling book of revenge and requests for divine retribution of one's enemies. Personally, I had to look elsewhere for comfort and support. Make me to hear joy and gladness, that my bones, which have been broken, may rejoice. So I'll ask you, who's broken your bones in your life? If you're living this thing called a life, you've had to experience brokenness along the way. You have to. It comes with living. Well, there could be many culprits. Sadly, as kind of Bruce alluded to in his reflection, sometimes our own families are a wellspring of damage, dysfunction, and brokenness. Or it could be society in general. It could be circumstances. It could be nature. It could be systems of oppression. Or it could be you and me. We bear some responsibility for the brokenness of others. We have the power to hurt. At times, if we feel we can get away with it, we wish to bend people to our wills at times. We tell people to clean up, or we tell groups of people to clean themselves up. And that's a lot to ask of some people, considering the circumstances that they're facing that we may not know about. We insist that people clean up and live by our rules, by our standards, as Bruce alluded to also in his reflection. Because, of course, our standards and our rules are right. Why might we do this? Why might we wish to bend people to our will? Why might we want people to clean up and live by our rules? Might there be some kind of twisted sense of injustice that we might be carrying with us? Some sense of injustice that we experienced long ago, yet is still with us, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the person we're trying to bend to our wills. Absolutely nothing to do with them. Maybe we have some unresolved issues that have to do with others who've tried to bend us to their will long ago. And unknowingly, we just perpetuate this bending and this hurt upon others. We're paying it forward. We're paying the hurt and pain forward. A karmic wheel of cause and effect, punishment and brokenness. According to Buddhist thought, the consequences of every action, good or bad, reverberate back upon the doer. The consequences of every action, good or bad, reverberate back upon the doer. Therefore, Buddhists would say that when you hurt somebody else, you are hurting yourself. You will be hurting yourself. And the pain that you may have had that caused that pain never goes away. It might only increase, actually. It can't be healed. And ultimately, the suffering just continues. There's no joy to be found in your brokenness, and your bones continue to cry out. Truly wise people, however, can see the hurtful and painful actions of others lie in the hurt and pain of those people committing those actions. They see the hurt and pain in those people. That's why they behave that way. And instead of responding with more hurt and pain, feeding that karmic wheel of pain and punishment, instead of paying that forward negatively, they try to turn the karmic wheel in a new direction by responding instead with loving kindness. And that is the true root of nonviolent resistance, the Satyagraha movements of Gandhi and Martin Luther King. Those nonviolent movements were not a tactic to use to shame, to publicly shame one's enemies. It wasn't a ploy to get media attention, to show the harmful behaviors of others. It was none of that. It was all rooted in loving kindness. Because those actions say that, you know, I can't create beloved community with you. I can't create a future relationship with you if when you're harming me, I harm you in return. I can't do that. So the only way I can create that beloved community is to respond with love. And loving kindness is the root of Jesus's talk of turning the other cheek, which we, a few weeks ago, humorously poked fun of. We had a service on humor. And somebody quoted that said, hey, you know, turning the other cheek is all fine and good, but Jesus was neither married nor a parent. Yeah. But turning the other cheek, it's difficult. Responding with loving kindness, responding to hate with loving kindness, And turning the other cheek requires that we put down our inherent brokenness, to set that aside, to set that aside, put that down, and respond in a new way. I heard a story on the radio 2 weeks ago about some immigration activists who were protesting outside the house, the personal house of an ICE official. And this ICE official has been particularly difficult on the immigrant and asylum-seeking community. And the activist was quoted as saying something like, "This man has been terrorizing us, and now we are terrorizing him." And as much as I sympathize with their cause, that's not anything I am going to be doing. As much as I wish to be an ally to their cause, and the immigrant and asylum-seeking community are truly being terrorized right now, they truly are. And as much as I sympathize with that cause, that perpetuation of terror and personal humiliation and dehumanizing people personally, that doesn't serve the cause of justice. That doesn't create beloved community. That doesn't turn the karmic wheel of cause and effect in a direction I want to go. I'm more than happy to go down to the ICE office. I'm more than happy to go to the government office. I'm more than happy to go to a corporation and protest against the corporations, because contrary to what the U.S. Supreme Court says in its Citizen United decision, corporations are not people. Can I get an amen? Yeah. You can't dehumanize a corporation, okay? So I was at immigration court several months ago. There was a clergy call. Often there's clergy calls to go appear at a specific case because the appearance of clergy can have an effect to get a person out on bond rather than having them languish in detention for months, sometimes even years. And I've been to immigration court's a circus, okay? The process is broken. But my experience, and I've been there many times, is that the judges have been fair. They've been respectful. Until this one day when I went down there. First time I had seen this one judge in Atlanta. From the beginning, this judge was committing microaggressions against everybody in the room, not just the asylum-seeking immigrant detainee, but his or her lawyer, if they had one, the ICE lawyer, people just sitting in the courtroom, and me personally. It was surreal. And afterwards, many of us clergy were gathering around, and someone threw out the idea that, you know, we should go to this guy's house and try to get him in protest and try to get him removed. I would agree that we should get him removed, but I am not going to his house. I am not going to dehumanize him. I don't know this judge's past. I don't know what he's, I don't know his history. But after that, I just thought, this guy must be really deeply hurting. He must be hurting. I was reminded of the words of Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, who wrote, when another person makes you suffer, it is because he suffers deeply within himself, and his suffering is spilling over. He does not need punishment. He needs help. He needs help. When I think about Donald Trump, I'm sorry. I see a person who's very, very hurt and troubled. And I don't think he has any awareness of it. It's like he doesn't know what love is. Maybe he's never experienced it, and he has no way of knowing. And I feel deeply sorry for him. We are all beautifully, beautifully broken imperfect, and wrecked we are. Yet we are all worthy of love. We are all imbued with inherent worth and dignity. We are all perfectly imperfect, as Bruce said. Perfectly imperfect, to quote Bruce Langston. And we can't fix one another. We have scars that don't come clean. They don't wash off. And most of them are on the inside, actually. But we can, out of love, out of loving kindness, clean each other up a little bit. Jesus washing the feet of the disciples. What a beautiful image that is. And how astounded his disciples were when he got down on his knees and began to wash their feet. The Messiah. It's a beautiful image. I know it's not easy, and it's not easy for me, but if you are willing to expose your brokenness here at Human to the other members of this congregation and to our newest members, if you are willing to be vulnerable, and if you're willing to commit yourself to the cleansing of the other members of this congregation and to our newest members, then our vision of creating a sanctuary for all, I mean, that we can be on that road to make that a reality. And that would be a beautiful, rich thing for all of you. For all of you. I want that for you. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my faults. Create in me a clean heart, and put a new and righteous spirit in me. Make me to hear joy and gladness, that my bones which have been broken may rejoice. Amen.